Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, he wakes me up. I hope he does the same for you. Ladies and gentlemen from New Orleans, Louisiana. And first of all, some things. You know, I don't pay close enough attention to the this has probably been all over the newscasts you like to follow, so I'm just catching up. July, that is to say the month we just completed, and I'm really proud of my job in completing it. July was the bloodiest month in Iraq for the past 2 years. So the surge worked. That was the whole goal of the surge, to bloody up Iraq, wasn't it? And in case you've not been counting, it is more than 5 months since the Iraqis held their election. The results of that election? Nothing. They still haven't formed a government. I would say we could bust our buttons right about now, ladies and gentlemen, with the job we've done over there, and take that lesson. You know, send the genius behind that over to... Oh, we did. Speaking of AFPAC, as part of the attempt to boost Afghanistan's economic and political development, the United States is paying thousands of Afghan contractors and subcontractors to perform much of the work there that supports U.S. efforts. It's sort of like what we do with everything. Outsource it, subcontract it, slice it, dice it. But according to the Washington Post, the Afghan First program could be achieving the opposite of its intended effect. They're quoting officials trying to figure out where the money is going. Good luck, boys. Initial assessments by newly organized military task forces. Now, we've been in this war now for 9 years. Just about time to organize those task forces. And government investigators indicate that instead of promoting new small and medium-sized businesses, yeah, that's what Afghanistan needs. Hardware stores. Instead of building trust and spreading the wealth, many of the contracts appear to have enriched Afghanistan's traditional power brokers and created new ones. Well, you could have knocked me down. We have the best of intentions, said Rear Admiral Kathleen Dussault, head of a new team of forensic auditors sent to examine the contracts there. But we need to look at how we're doing business, she says. It's one of several new initiatives after widespread reports that U.S. spending in Afghanistan in amounts far exceeding Afghanistan's total national income may have exacerbated some of the problems we set out to solve and is a major contributor to the corruption that hobbles U.S. efforts. In other words, we're being self-defeating at the hands of the genius that got us the bloodiest month in 2 years this past July in Iraq. I didn't say he wasn't a genius. It's just a particular kind of genius. After 8 years and more than $50 billion spent in Afghanistan, the United States still has no comprehensive database on reconstruction contracts. Well, where would you get one of those? That would be basically, what, $80 at Fry's? I'm not plugging Fry's, and no integrated system to protect to track projects that are completed, ongoing, and planned. Well, that would require like a 19-year-old kid to think that up, figure out how to do that. It's not enough to simply conduct audits of contract and program management after the money's been spent, according to the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction. So, we got this thing nailed. Now, ladies and gentlemen, again, because, you know, I'm sure this has been on the news all over the place. Remember when the CIA sent word in 2005 to destroy the scores of videotapes showing waterboarding and other harsh interrogation tactics? That's harsh. When CIA sent word to destroy those videotapes, that is to say, there is an unusual omission in the carefully worded memo ordering the destruction. They left out the names of two CIA lawyers. Ooh, somebody didn't want to be nailed. Once a CIA lawyer has weighed in on even a routine matter, officers rarely give an order without copying the lawyer in on the decision. It's standard procedure, a way for managers to cover themselves if a decision goes bad. But when the CIA's top clandestine officer in those days, Jose Rodriguez, sent a cable to the agency's secret prison in Thailand and told his station chief to destroy videotapes showing waterboarding, he left the lawyer's names off the memo. This is according to a report from the Associated Press. Prosecutors in the case of that destruction, have focused on a little-used section of the 2002 law intended to prevent future Enron accounting scandals. The law makes it a crime to destroy documents even if no court has said they must be kept and no investigators are looking for them. Uh-oh. No way, Jose. The question arises, who pays for LeBron James's new contract with the Miami Heat? And the answer is the Miami Heat's ticket sales office. The Heat easily sold out its season tickets after James announced he was joining the team. The Heat fired its entire ticket sales staff on Friday as a result. Now that the supply for season tickets has been exhausted, we no longer require a season ticket sales team, the Heat said in a brief statement. A team spokeswoman declined to comment or answer questions about the firings. 30 people lost their jobs. LeBron, babe, congratulations. Our sales reps were manning the phones around the clock, says a team spokeswoman, Lori Ann Diaz. We couldn't get them to go home. There was very little inventory remaining once LeBron officially made his decision, and we sold out of that in record time. So congratulations, you're fired. Next time, go home. Take it easy. Man the phones, you know, 9 to 3. And speaking of money, Rupert Murdoch has finally figured out a way to make the White House pay it, him, money. Literally. The Murdoch-owned Wall Street Journal has jacked up the rate it charges the administration's news clipping service by $600,000 a year. This is taxpayer money, said a White House official. We have no idea how we're going to handle this. We may have to drop clipping the Journal for our officials. It's unclear how, according to Politico, how News Corporation arrived at the $600,000 figure. Roop wants to make money on this thing. However, the White House has a private organization, Bulletin News of Reston, Virginia, to produce the clipping service, and Rupert happens to own his own clipping service. And they sent word, hey, White House, why don't you deal directly with us? Which I think is everyone's goal in life, to deal directly with Rupert. Hello, welcome to the show.
Take your heat. beside him. It's no contest as the one and only rising.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Heat waves, like those that baked the Northeast in July... You don't mean in July, do you? Surely you don't mean in July. Yes, I do. Are likely to be more frequent and more intense in the future, with their efforts amplified in densely built urban environments like Manhattan, according to climate scientists at the City College of New York. Manhattan is subject to an urban heat island effect. Urban heat island, welcome. Because its physical landscape is significantly different from the surrounding suburbs, says Dr. Jorge Gonzalez. This makes heat waves here more intense because Manhattan cannot cool off as readily as outlying areas. Factors that contribute to the urban heat inland island effect include energy demand, air quality, asphalt surfaces, and exhaust fumes. Data collected by City College indicates that during the first July heat wave, overnight low temperatures ran 10 to 15 degrees higher in Manhattan than on... Well, okay, so why is this happening? Climate scientists... Among the issues that they're going to address is the role played by climate change in the past and present as well as in the future. So far, we just know Manhattan's hotter. Sweat it out, babe. Baby fish may become easy meat for predators as the world's oceans become more acidic due to CO2 fallout from human activity. This, according to an international team of researchers, in a series of experiments reported in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I left that copy of it under the thing. The team found that as carbon levels rise and ocean water acidifies, the behavior of baby fish changes dramatically in ways that decrease their chances of survival by 50% to 80%. As carbon dioxide increases in the atmosphere and dissolves into the oceans, the water becomes slightly more acidic. Eventually, this reaches a point where it significantly changes the sense of smell and behavior of larval fish, says team leader Professor Philip Munday of the Australian Research Council's Center for Excellence for Coral Reef Studies. No, they do not have a Center for Mediocrity for Coral Reef Studies, but they're thinking about it. Instead of avoiding predators, they become attracted to them, talking about the baby fish, he says. They appear to lose their natural caution and start taking big risks, such as swimming out in the open, with lethal consequences. A co-author in the paper says the change in fish behavior could have serious implications for the sustainability of fish populations because fewer baby fish will survive to replenish adult populations. Or they just got to get smarter larvae. Can you work on that, fish people? A new article published in the 29th of July issue of the journal Nature reveals for the first time that microscopic marine algae known as phytoplankton have been declining globally over the 20th century. Phytoplankton forms the basis, the very bottom of the marine food chain, and sustains diverse assemblages of species ranging from tiny zooplankton to large marine mammals, seabirds, and fish. Says lead author Daniel Boyce, phytoplankton is the fuel on which marine ecosystems run. A decline of phytoplankton affects everything up the food chain, including humans. Humans, ladies and gentlemen. Humans. But don't worry about that. We'll get our food from somewhere else, won't we? I'm sure there's another planet around where we can get our food. But wait, there's more. Using an unprecedented collection of historical and recent oceanographic data, a team from Canada's Dalhousie University documented phytoplankton declines of about 1% of the global average per year. It's particularly well documented in the Northern Hemisphere and after 1950. Huh. And would translate into a decline of approximately 40% since 1950. The scientists found that long-term phytoplankton declines were negatively correlated with rising sea surface temperatures and changing oceanographic conditions. Well, we'll make fish. soot from the burning of fossil fuels and solid biofuels contributes far more to global warming than has been thought, according to a new Stanford study. But unlike carbon dioxide, soot lingers only a few weeks in the atmosphere, so curbing emissions could have a significant and rapid impact on the climate. Controlling soot may be the only option for saving the Arctic sea ice from melting. If soot emissions were eliminated, more than 1.5 million premature deaths from soot inhalation could be prevented worldwide each year. The quickest, best way to slow the rapid melting of Arctic sea ice is to reduce soot emissions from the burning of fossil fuel, wood, and dung. Ladies and gentlemen, can you do your part, please, and stop burning the dung? Really, I've been wanting to call you about this. This is according to a new study by Stanford researcher Mark Jacobson. His analysis shows soot is second only to carbon dioxide in creating, contributing to global warming. I thought it was methane. He said climate models to date have mischaracterized the effects of soot in the atmosphere. So soot's contribution to global warming has been ignored in policy legislation, he says. We have to start taking soot's effects into account in planning our mitigation efforts, and the sooner we start making changes, the better, he says. Sooty. News of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now more about Iraq. The deadliest July, the deadliest month in 2 years this past July, which to me says, you know, good progress. But looking back into the past now, as has been done for the past 6 or 7 months in Great Britain, the Iraq inquiry rang down the curtain on public testimony this week. Witnesses included Hans Blix, the former chief of UN weapons inspectors in Iraq. And I know he was widely derided by administration officials at the time. Yet, of course, what Hans Blix said then seems to have been validated by subsequent events. He's also an attorney, an international law attorney, international law. So when he opines that the war was illegal, he at least has a thing on his wall to back him up. Anyway, he came up with a phrase I'd not heard before in describing his assessment of why the diplomatic track, and including the return of inspectors, weapons inspectors to Iraq, was short-circuited in 2003. He said the diplomatic calendar conflicted with the military calendar. We had to start fighting before it got too hot in Iraq to fight. And here's the phrase that stuck in my mind from that testimony. He said the United States was high on military, unquote. Meanwhile, the British Foreign Office has declined to comment on claims by a former diplomat that had blocked key parts of his testimony to the Iraq inquiry. Karn Ross, the British Iraq expert at the UN from 1997 to 2002, said the Foreign Office withheld documents he requested and warned him not to refer to a key memo. The Foreign Office says we're not going to comment on what witnesses have said. Ross appeared before the inquiry earlier this month, alleged that deep state elements were preventing the inquiry from finding out the true reason for the invasion of Iraq in 2003. He said he had planned to detail how the British government failed to consider, let alone implement, available alternatives to military action. But he said he was prevented from doing this because the Foreign Office withheld documents, including one he claimed related to a visit to Syria by former Prime Minister Tony Blair, and another on a failure to deal with a pipeline he said enabled Iraq to illegally export oil through Syria. He said he was told such documents could not be found. He said that explanation was simply not plausible. And then the week ended with testimony by the former Deputy Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, John Prescott. Ladies and gentlemen, he talked for quite a while, as these people tend to do. I'll call your attention just, I'm sure you've heard this. It's been on the news, I'm sure. I will call your attention just to this question and answer sequence. And please note the name and the party affiliation of the person he refers to as the first person he heard from that the United States was, after 9/11, going into Iraq.
Lord Prescott, when did you personally first become aware of the discussion between the Prime Minister and the President that might lead to the removal of Saddam Hussein?
Well, I think the first awareness was when I visited the United States
That was when?
Just a couple of days after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I had a meeting with Mr. Cheney, our vice president, and I can recall the meeting because him and the president were being hidden in different parts of the UK, and I had to conduct my interview by a video
screen.
You mean
different parts of the USA?
Yes, sorry. Thank you. But I had to do it by a video screen, and I couldn't help but point out that perhaps he was hiding in a cave that was probably more luxurious than Bin Laden. But in going to America at that time, I talked to a number of my senator friends, Democrat ones, and I was absolutely surprised to find them talking about an aggressive attitude that Iraq was unfinished business. And one of my own friends for 25 years, Senator Chris Dodd, I said, Chris, how can you be expressing this? He said, it's unfinished business, we've got to sort it out. And when I talked to some of the chairmen of the various defense committees there, it was clear they were planning. And I came back to Tony and said, I don't know what you think and what you're getting, but they are planning to go in with us or without us, but they are going to do it. And I think the evidence has shown that. So that was my first alarm, that it was being planned, that it was a military intervention, it was regime change. And that's what they were embarked upon while we were talking about let's get them through the UN.
When he came back and you mentioned that to Prime Minister Tony Blair, what was his reaction? What did he say to you?
In his mind, he knew that the military people were planning, but he had to get them off that course.
Well, he did a good job of it. Chris Dodd, ladies and gentlemen, days after 9/11. Just, you know, a little piece, little nutty piece of the historical record from the Iraq inquiry in Great Britain. Now, mercifully ended for the sake of all of us, because, you know, we don't need to know this stuff. This is scaring the horses. And now, ladies and gentlemen, pregnant pause and news from outside the bubble. And first item regards this particular celebrity.
Hi, everybody. This is Tom Jones, Santa Monica, home of the homeless.
Thank you, Tom. But Tom Jones doesn't like women throwing their underwear at him anymore. That's right. The 70-year-old who once reveled in women hurling their knickers has claimed he feels insulted and wishes they would stop. He said ladies often launched the offending articles during inappropriate moments, such as when he's singing a ballad. He told the London Times magazine, it's just wrong. I'm laying my soul down here and people start laughing. You know that his new record was not received well by his record company. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. He's hoping songs from the new album will not prompt a shower of women's underwear when played live. They have titles such as Lord Help the Poor and If I Give My Soul. The singer admits that in his bid to whip up a crowd, he can be his, quote, own worst enemy. The first time a pair of knickers was thrown on stage at him, he made a point of using them to mop his brow. From The Age in Melbourne, Australia, people who take calcium supplements to prevent and treat osteoporosis have a 30% increased of risk of heart attacks. Researchers said the use of supplements should be reassessed in light of the analysis published in the British Medical Journal. They said because supplements were widely used, the modest increase in heart attack risk could translate into a large burden of disease in the world. The researchers, led by Mark Bulland of the University of Auckland, analyzed five studies of more than 8,000 patients, half of whom were on calcium supplements. Of the patients who took the supplements, 143 had heart attacks compared to 111 on a placebo. Previous studies had found no increased risk of heart attacks with higher calcium intake from food, and their analysis suggested the hazard was associated with supplements. Draw your own conclusions, if you can draw. And from The Guardian, plans to begin handing control of provinces in Afghanistan to Afghan security forces by the end of this year have been quietly dropped amid fears among European countries that General Petraeus, the new U.S. commander, is less committed to a speedy transfer of power. Why would that be? The Afghans are perfectly capable. The change of tack revealed in the final communique from an historic international conference in Kabul, that's American, reflects Petraeus' concerns that security conditions in Afghanistan are too weak for a transition of power to begin as quickly as originally planned, according to a NATO official speaking to The Guardian. The conference agreed the security needs of the country will have to be met by the Afghan army and police by 2014. Major European troop contributors were looking forward to more rapid progress in the relatively stable north and west of the country. The difficulties were highlighted with another incident this week. I don't need to go into the details of the incident. But it became clear that plans first agreed by NATO ministers at a meeting in Estonia in April had been quietly dropped. NATO had hoped that by the end of this year, a cluster of neighboring provinces in the northwest would have begun the handover to the Afghan army and police force. But in the final agreement, a reference to transition taking place on a province-by-province basis from an earlier draft had been removed. A NATO official said the change reflected Petraeus's wish to slow the pace of the transfer of power. News from outside. I'm sure we all know that. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. What's the Army Corps of Engineers up to? Well, they're fixing things up here in New Orleans. For details, I know it's relentless. See The Big Uneasy coming the end of this month, ladies and gentlemen, nationwide. Theater near you. Or don't. That can't be a call to action, can it? It was also a call to inaction. Inaction. Unless the levees in Chemung County, New York, are certified, a federal agency is treating them as if they don't exist. And that affects floodplain maps that are being updated, county officials complain. Michael Smith, the county fire and emergency services director, says the Corps designed and oversaw construction of the levees. Uh-huh. Has inspected them every year. Uh-huh. And says they're being properly maintained and operated. Uh-huh. But FEMA does not accept that and wants the levees independently certified. Huh. FEMA does not talk to the Corps of Engineers, which in my mind, says Smith, is kind of dumbfounding. Well, even dumb has to start somewhere. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has been reluctant to sign a certification for fear of liability in the event of a catastrophic flooding event and one of the levees failed, which in fact, he says, happened in 1972. Ladies and gentlemen. Levee built by the Army Corps of Engineers. If those levees are not included on revised floodplain maps, more than 8,000 parcels in Elmira and Southport, New York, would be added to the flood hazard area. Property owners with mortgages in those affected areas would be required to buy costly flood insurance. All this, says Smith, County Executive Tom Santulli, all this, in my opinion, has been driven by what happened in New Orleans, where levees were built and failed after Hurricane Katrina. Who told him that? I didn't know that. I'll have to go recut the film. And, ladies and gentlemen, you know about the mess at Arlington National Cemetery, where officials knew more than 5 years ago that many burials did not match the maps and paper records. Senate documents reveal that a contractor hired to test the accuracy of records told cemetery officials about the errors in 2005, but they were not corrected. Arlington officials spent millions more than the Army has previously acknowledged in the failed effort to digitize its records. Well, that would require a 19-year-old kid to do. That costs... and did not tell the Office of Management and Budget officials about a report that recommended it use an existing, cheaper system rather than attempt to build its own. I know, but these are special burials. The documents paint a picture of Arlington officials who selectively shared information with superiors about problems at the cemetery. Army officials up the chain of command did not exercise even the most basic oversight when continued spending on the same blunders raised obvious questions. This all came out in the... advent of a Senate hearing, but the report also says, ears up, ladies and gentlemen, that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers approved a technology contract for Arlington National Cemetery that it did not have the expertise to oversee. Nice people doing nice things. And we will oil the chair.
Se o senhor me for louvado, eu vou voltar pro meu cerrado. Por ali ficou quem temperou o meu amor e semeou em mim essa incrível saudade. Se é por vontade de Deus, vale, vale. Se o
eu vou voltar pro meu cerrado. Por ali ficou quem temperou o meu amor e semeou em mim essa incrível saudade. Se é por vontade de Deus, se pedir a Deus pelo meu prazer, não por pecado, vou rezar pra quando eu voltar a rever todas as brincadeiras do passado. Corteja meu cerrado e em dia feriado, viva o cordão azul e encarnado. Eu sei, serei feliz de novo, meu povo, deixa eu chorar. Eu vou voltar pro meu cerrado. Por ali ficou quem temperou o meu amor e semeou em mim essa incrível saudade. Se é por vontade de Deus, vale. Se o Senhor me for louvado, eu vou voltar pro meu cerrado. Por ali ficou quem temperou o meu amor e semeou em mim essa incrível saudade. Se é por vontade de Deus, vale. Se pedir a Deus pelo meu prazer, não for pecado, vou rezar pra quando eu voltar a rever todas as brincadeiras do passado. Corteja meu cerrado e em dia feriado, viva o cordão azul e encarnado. Serei feliz de novo, meu povo, deixa eu chorar com você. Yeah, 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 yeah. Serei feliz de novo, meu povo, deixa eu chorar com você. Yeah, yeah. Serei feliz de novo, meu povo, deixa eu chorar.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Can't you just see the spectacle? The multitudes in many colored uniforms in your mind's eye. Does your mind's eye have HD? See if you can get that arranged before. Britain's hopes of success in athletics events, that's track and field to you and me, at the 2012 London Olympics, could be seriously damaged, ladies and gentlemen, by a ban on a popular starting pistol. This, in a statement from an official of the sport's governing body. The Olympic 380 BBM was banned last month in Great Britain after being used in a series of shootings. Police discovered criminal gangs had been converting the pistols from firing blanks to live ammunition. But David Brown, firearms licensing manager for UK Athletics, that's track and field to you and me, has now said that races around the country have been brought to a, quote, virtual standstill, with only 2 years yet to go before the games. Isn't that really that really boring video game that kids play, Virtual Standstill? The implications for our major Olympic sport in the lead-up to 2012 should not be underestimated, he said. The guns are the only thing that give a dual signal, a flash and smoke, to the athletes in front of you and the timekeepers. There is nothing else, except at the Olympic Games level, where they have electronic guns. That is why it has been massively detrimental. So get electronic guns, babe. The gun is now banned in the United Kingdom, and possession of it could lead to a prison sentence of up to 5 years. You'd get out in time for the Olympics in Rio. Well, what do you want? No gun crime? Or to win a couple of medals? You decide. The Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's clean, it's safe, it's cheap, it's too clean, too safe, too cheap, too clean, too safe, too cheap to meter. It is, of course, nuclear power. Scientists say contamination in the Chernobyl exclusion zone, you know, the place where you can't go, has affected biodiversity. The largest wildlife census of its kind conducted in Chernobyl has revealed that mammals are declining in the exclusion zone surrounding the nuclear power plant. You know, mammals are overrated. I'm going to say that. I know the mammal lobby is going to come down on me like a ton of apes and whales, but the study aimed to establish the most reliable way to measure the impact on wildlife of contamination in the zone. It's based on almost 4 years of counting and studying animals there. The truth is that these radiation contamination effects were so large as to be overwhelming, says Tim Masseau of the University of North Carolina. The scientists say birds provide the best quantitative measures of these impacts in the journal Ecological Indicators. In their census of species, provides more evidence that contamination has a significant effect on biodiversity. They counted wildlife, including insects, amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals. Their previously published work revealed some of the negative impacts on birds and insects of the low-level radiation still contaminating the exclusion zone. The new data on mammals and reptiles shows what Professor Masseau described as a strong signal of reduced biodiversity in these groups, too. So don't count on your favorite TV gecko being there. Solar voltaic energy systems have long been painted as a clean way to generate electricity, but expensive compared with other alternatives to oil, like nuclear power. No longer. The New York Times reported this week, in a historic crossover, the costs of solar photovoltaic systems have declined to the point where they are lower than the rising projected costs of new nuclear plants. Quoting a paper written by John Blackburn at Duke University and Sam Cunningham, photovoltaics have joined the ranks of lower-cost alternatives to new nuclear plants. The crossover occurred at 16 cents per kilowatt-hour. The costs of nuclear power have been rising inexorably over the past 8 years. Estimates of construction costs, almost $3 billion per reactor in 2002, have been regularly revised upward to an average of about $10 billion per reactor, and the estimates are likely to keep rising. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a finding of very low safety significance related to a testing mishap that happened during the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant's most recent refueling outage. According to the report, although Entergy, which owns and operates the plant, violated regulatory requirements, the issue was entered into the company's corrective action program and is being treated as a non-cited violation. During a test of the plant's emergency core cooling systems in May, operators inadvertently drained water from the reactor pressure vessel, and approximately 2,000 gallons of radioactive water flowed into the steam lines. It was unexpected, and Entergy is expected to take steps to ensure this doesn't happen in the future, said the spokesperson. So it's unexpected, and they're expected. See? And safety and design concerns are being suppressed at Hanford's $12.3 billion vitrification plant. That's the plant to store high-level radioactive waste as a form of glass. This is a charge from the engineering manager who oversaw research and technology for the team until he was dismissed earlier this month. Walter Tamositis says he believes he was removed from the project for raising concerns about future safe operations at the plant, and that retaliation, he says, has had an immediate chilling effect on the project safety quality, leaving other employees questioning whether they should raise issues. Nah! Let it, you know, that's for other people. That's for people, that's for our grandchildren to figure out. Come on, they got to have something to do. They need some challenge. It's clean, it's safe, it's cheap, it's too thin to meter. Nuclear power, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you know, I know you know this, the outgoing boss of BP, Tony Hayward, he stepped down this week. You heard that he was planning to on this broadcast, I think, last week. Now he says he was demonized and vilified. But he agrees the firm could not move on with him at the helm. This is a very sad day for me personally, Hayward told reporters. Whether it is fair or unfair is not the point. I became the public face of the disaster and was demonized and vilified. Sometimes you step off the pavement and get hit by a bus. His bus includes a pension worth about 600,000 pounds, be like $9 million a year when he reaches his 55th birthday in a year and a half. So get the license number of that bus, will you, Tony? He's left by mutual consent. The terms of his contract will be honored, meaning he will also receive a full year's salary, plus retain the rights on shares, which could be worth millions of dollars. That's a big bus. That's probably a double-decker. Hayward is likely to retain a role within the company. BP is planning to nominate him as a non-executive director of its Russian joint venture. He told the Wall Street Journal in an interview that I don't think the White House paid to disseminate. Quote, I became a villain for doing the right thing. And then, in case anybody was in doubt, he reduced his thoughts to song.
I should have been yachting. I should have been chilling. I did the right thing, and they made me a villain. I want my life back, away from the gusher. They gave me my life back, but they sent it to Russia. Oh, Macondo. Into you my career fell. Macondo, you really were the well from hell. We paid off the experts, and we shut out the newsies. We counted the damage in onesies and twosies. I want my life back, an end to the racket. All I got was this deep water horizon tour jacket. Oh, Macondo. Who imagined you'd leak and spill? Macondo, never alive, but so hard to kill. We cut a few corners, and we saved a few bulbs. All at once I'm as bad as the boss of the mob. I love my children. We talk and we text. I've got my life back, and the book deal is next. Oh, Macondo, hope that you again I'll never see. Macondo, till I start taping for A and E.
And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Last week, the British newspaper The Daily Star published a sensational scoop that Rockstar Games was preparing Grand Theft Auto Rothbury, inspired by the murderer Raoul Moat. It's a British crime story. It was a hoax. But it would be too kind to describe the Star as a victim. The paper compounded its error by mocking up a fake cover and by soliciting a response from the grandmother of Moat's girlfriend. Now the Star has issued a long, groveling apology. The paper admits it didn't check up a story with Rockstar Games, a mistake for which it will pay substantial damages. Rockstar is donating the money to charity. Climate change protesters were... Oh, sorry. Environmental group WWF, formerly the World Wildlife Fund, has apologized to Saudi Arabia after one of its workers vandalized the country's nameplate at a climate conference. The employee broke the plastic nameplate into two pieces, threw it into a toilet, took photographs of it, and distributed the pictures. The incident caused an uproar at a UN conference in June in the German city of Bonn. Saudi Arabia is often criticized by environmentalists. It is a major oil producer. WWF said the employee who was not named had acted without the organization's knowledge and that he no longer worked for them. Take your pictures of nameplates and toilets elsewhere, sir. Muslims are forbidden from eating pork. It is considered a sin. A prison now has apologized for serving Muslim inmates burgers containing pork. Pork burgers from the famous... No. An investigation was launched after Muslim inmates at His Majesty's Prison Ford, an open prison in West Sussex, England, said they were given pork burgers. The inmates complained after seeing packaging for the burgers, which displayed pork ingredients. A thorough investigation, said the prison, has found the mistake was human error. They first tried to blame the pigs. Dateline Augusta, Maine, Republican gubernatorial nominee Paul LePage has apologized to Libby Mitchell, his Democratic opponent, on a morning radio show for a jab he made about Mitchell's age. If Elizabeth is offended by it, my deepest apologies, because it was certainly never meant to offend her, LePage said. She's worked very hard and she's had a good career. During a campaign and fundraising stop last Saturday in Bath, Maine, LePage, who was 61, had made a joke about the fact that Mitchell had just turned 70. That comment upset members of the Maine chapter of the AARP. ARP. The mayor of Bell, California. And ladies and gentlemen, you're going to write this joke yourself. I don't need to. You'll write it yourself at the end, and then you'll recite it to yourself, and then you'll complain to yourself. The mayor of Bell, California, whose municipal pay records have been subpoenaed by the Attorney General in California, apologized for what he called the city's indefensible administrative salaries. Oscar Hernandez paid almost $100,000 as part-time mayor of Bell, population 38,000, said he'll serve the remainder of his term without pay. Brown said he subpoenaed hundreds of employment, salary, and contract records from the city of Bell. Oh, no, sorry, that the Attorney General has done that. The manager of the city of Bell had taken an annual salary of almost $800,000 and resigned last week. The Attorney General is considering civil or criminal action against city leaders. Hundreds of citizens marched through Bell to protest. My priority has been to make Bell a city its residents can be proud to call home, Hernandez said in the statement. I apologize that the council's past decisions with regard to the indefensible administrative salaries have failed to pass that test, unquote. Bell has a largely Latino population with a per capita income of $24,800. And this is you writing the joke and telling yourself the joke and complaining. Filmmaker Oliver Stone apologized for remarks about the Holocaust and Jewish media influence that were criticized as being anti-Semitic in trying to make a broader historical point about the range of atrocities the Germans committed against many people. I made a clumsy association about the Holocaust, for which I am sorry and I regret, Stone said in a statement released by his public relations firm. So it must be sincere. The apology followed comments Stone made to the Sunday Times of London in an interview promoting a new documentary. Oh, so he wants some press. I see. Stone also discussed a project in the works, Secret History of America. Hitler was a Frankenstein, but there was also a Dr. Frankenstein, Stone told the Times. German industrialists, the Americans, and the British. He had a lot of support. Stone sought to put the atrocities in proportion, the Times reported. Hitler did far more damage to the Russians than the Jewish people, 25 or 30 million. He also discussed the article, in the article, what he called Jewish domination of the media in America. Now, here's the statement from his publicist. Jews obviously do not control media or any other industry. The fact that the Holocaust is still a very important, vivid, and current matter today is, in fact, a great credit to the very hard work of a broad coalition of people committed to the remembrance of this atrocity. And it was an atrocity. Oliver Stone's publicist, reaping the benefits of him saying something and then retracting it in the run-up to a movie release. Good work, everybody. Deadline Columbus, Ohio. A clothing chain has apologized for store employees in Ohio who told a nursing mother to go to a dressing room to continue breastfeeding. 2005 Ohio law gives women legal protection to breastfeed in public, but not at an American Eagle Outfitters store in Columbus that particular day. Dallas Cowboys tight end Martellus Bennett apologized this week after naked pictures of his body appeared on the Internet. Who would want to see a naked tight end, I ask you? These pictures were taken 4 years ago and placed on the Internet recently without my knowledge or consent. I understand that they are totally inappropriate, and for that I am sorry. I regret the embarrassment it has caused the organization. The Cowboys said they are addressing the situation with Bennett internally, but did not specify what they're inserting or where. Deadline Battle Creek, Michigan. More than 1,000 barrels of crude oil has been recovered from the Kalamazoo River, according to Enbridge, the company responsible for the spill. The recovered oil is being measured and stored to determine how much oil originally spilled from the Enbridge pipeline. The company still estimates that about 19,000 barrels flowed into the river earlier this week. The president of Enbridge apologized for the mess we have made. Enbridge President Patrick Daniel said the company takes full responsibility for the cleanup and will ask for BP's help in buying TV commercials. No, didn't say that. Dateline Toronto, an Anglican priest, female priest in Canada, yes, they have female priests in Canada, has apologized for offering communion to a dog after the incident added to further tensions within the Anglican Church. Donald Keith took his dog Trapper, a German Shepherd Rhodesian Ridgeback crossbreed, don't you know, into St. Peter's Church in Toronto, where Reverend Marguerite Ray was officiating. The man and his dog frequented the park outside the church. An interim priest, Ray, welcomed the two inside and offered communion to both Keith and Trapper. One parishioner filed a formal complaint. After the action became public, Ray apologized during her Sunday sermon to anyone who may have been hurt or embarrassed by her actions. She explained the initial gesture as a way of welcoming a stranger. Says the chancellor of the Anglican Network in Canada, communion to a dog is not something that will ever happen to our or any Bible-believing Christian church anywhere in the world. So dogs, be warned. Don't even try. Don't even beg. Representative Jean Green has apologized to the chairwoman of the House Ethics Committee for revealing how the committee wanted to publish Representative Charles Rangel, Democrat of New York. It's the Rangel. Dateline West Valley City, Utah. West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder has apologized for appearing in an ad for a client of his public relations firm. In an interview with CNN's Anderson Cooper, ousted USDA official Shirley Sherrod accused Andrew Breitbart of racism and supporting a return to slavery. This week, Cooper apologized to his audience for not questioning that claim and letting her, quote, get away with saying things which cannot be supported by facts, unquote. He's keeping her honest, is Anderson Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week, it is a copyrighted feature. No matter what anyone says, it's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, two different locations on your computer whenever you want it, at live and archived, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, available on your smartphone through stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at audible.com/LeShow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'll be just like next month being the bloodiest month for 2 years in Iraq, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile and Hawaii desks, to Pam Halstead and to Bob Dunn here at WWNO-FM in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The show is on Twitter at LeTwits. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community which even Tom Jones knows is recognized around the world as the home of the knicker-throwing homeless.